This is Shaping Appalachia, a public affairs program discussing the issues facing Appalachia, Kentucky, hosted by Morehead State University President Wayne D. Andrews and moderated by Jason Blanton.
Welcome to this month's edition of Shaping Appalachia. I'm Jason Blanton, joined by Morehead State President Wayne Andrews and Dr. Andrews. We have a great topic and a great guest for this month's show.
Really excited about this, Jason. We have with us Dr. Tom Williams from the Department of English at Morehead State. We'll introduce him formally in just a moment.
And we'll come back with a show after this.
The Kraft Academy for Excellence in Science and Mathematics at Morehead State is a dual-credit residential high school experience, offering select juniors and seniors the opportunity to enter one of the top public universities in the South. Students engage in research projects with a unique focus on entrepreneurship and innovation, creativity and design, civic and regional engagement. Tuition, housing, and meals are provided at no cost. Visit online, moreheadstate.edu/craft-academy.
Morehead State University continues to be recognized as one of the top veteran-friendly schools in the nation. Current and former members of the military can discover much more in a supportive environment. Morehead State helps remove the barriers to your education by waiving the application fee, offering early registration, awarding academic credit for military experience, and accommodating military obligations. You have done so much for our country. MSU wants to do much more for you. Visit moreheadstate.edu/veteran for more information.
Welcome back to Shaping Appalachia. I'm Jason Blanton, joined by Morehead State President Wayne Andrews. Creative writing, the topic of this month's show. And we have the main man, the department chair of the Department of English, Dr. Tom Williams, with us.
Tom, you've been at Morehead State University now, gosh, I don't know, 7 or 8 years, probably 5 years. It just seems like you've been here a long time, and you've made a significant contribution to our university. And one of the things that intrigues me about what we're doing at Morehead State University is that we're offering a baccalaureate degree. It's a Bachelor of Fine Arts in Creative Writing, and you are yourself a creative writer. So I thought perhaps for our listening audience, what we might start with is talk generally about the Department of English.
Well, it's a real pleasure to be here. In our department, I think one of the things that sort of marks us really in terms of what we offer the students is that we have a real diverse array of talents and disciplines within English. It's a good place if you want to, obviously, talk about American literature, learn more about British literature, but also Appalachian literature in particular. It's also a good place if you wanted to think about publishing and editing as a potential career. You know, we have a number of faculty who bring a variety of interests to their classroom, and we do it in the classroom, we do it online, we do it through ITV. So we're, and in some ways, we're a real pioneer at Morehead with online service. But as far as creative writing goes, because the act is so solitary, it happens in quiet rooms, cafes, you know, things like that. People tend to think that it's just a gift. Mm-hmm. You know, there's some people who have a great talent and they're able to find the time to share that. But if you look at any great writer's biography, you'll notice that there is almost always some instance of mentorship and study and apprenticeship. Hemingway says that, you know, if a young man who wants to be a writer, all he needs to do is go to Paris.
Yeah,
well,
right.
that's maybe not the most economically feasible idea for everybody. But another thing that he did when he was in Paris was he studied with Gertrude Stein and Sherwood Anderson,
right,
who were two of the best writers of their generation and very generous with instruction. And so we're kind of doing the similar thing here at Morehead State and other places that offer creative writing, is that students who have an interest, have an inkling, have written a story or a poem or an essay and finished it and said, I'd like to do this again. We have among our faculty active publishing poets, essayists, novelists, short story writers. And we have these classes that both from the introductory level to the sort of middle level to the advanced level. That's what we do. We write. We read other people's work, both in the classroom, but also the masters, contemporaries as well. And we talk about not so much literature in the way of what it means, but how it gets there. You know, how do you start a story? When do you end a poem? You know, where do you insert the right kind of scene in an essay? And it's these kind of matters that if you really want to go on to find some success in publishing your own work, this is what you want to talk about. This is what, you know, when chefs get together, this is what they want to talk about. How you do it, how you put it together. Right. This is how craftsmen sit around and talk about, you know, building things, like whether you use this joint or that joint, and what service it might provide the overall product.
Well, Tom, describe some of the skill sets, because I think that's a really nice introduction to this subpart of the discipline. What are the skill sets? I mean, you know, because I think you're absolutely right. I think of myself, some of the things I'm interested in, I'm a builder.
Right.
I love to build things. But there's so much to learn from other craftsmen, from books, from photographs, and then the working next to a master.
Right.
What are the skill sets?
The skill sets, really, I think that there's, number one, a sense of narrative, a sense of what makes a story worth telling. I probably quote too many people because people quoted them to me when I was a younger person, and it stuck with me. But the British novelist Anthony Trollope said, write not to tell a story, but write because you have a story to tell.
Oh, nice.
It can be enhanced. It can be developed. But there's probably some people, and I think that we could probably go out to any town in our service region and find plenty of good storytellers, people who know, you know, how to open, how to capture attention, how to insert kind of like a reason to sit around and hear more, and how to end it in a way that completes it but yet makes you want more.
Yeah.
So that kind of sense of narrative. Mm. Also, I think a sense of the musicality of language. It's that sensitivity, awareness of what language can do, how it sounds.
Mm-hmm.
But then I think as well another skill set here is becoming, and this is the one thing I think that we can teach every day of the week, is becoming your best editor.
Mm.
The publishing industry is changing. There is no longer this sense that there's a guy in Manhattan who looks for raw, untamed writers and says, I can edit this and shape it into a book. You know, no, an editor in Manhattan is thinking like, well, is this going to sell film rights? Is this going to, you know, have overseas distribution? A good writer is her or his best editor. And to understand what your shortcomings are, what's your pet words that you use over too many times, and how to strike them, how to eliminate them, how to become not fond of your own voice and say, you know, this story didn't get started until page five. I'm going to cut these first four pages, and I'm not going to linger over it, nor I'm going to cut this ending. So those things in particular, I think, really are the things that we're able to both enhance or really instruct upon. And the truth is that I think a lot of people have many of those characteristics already. It's just that they haven't had the forum where it can really come out, and that's where the classroom works. Because if you take my class, I mean, I'll tell you, you know, like, we're going to write a lot of stories this semester. We're going to write maybe five, maybe 10. And, you know, not all of them are going to be good. Maybe you might not even keep any of them for posterity or to try and move along in terms of publication. But you'll get better at it because you'll start to sense, you'll start to kind of use the muscles that you need for writing, and they'll get better, and before you know it, you're doing things that you wouldn't have done on your own.
How do you approach the feedback to the student? Because writing is a very personal endeavor, and I've seen students, and of course I've had them in my own classes over time, that are either enthusiastic or offended by the feedback. And boy, I would imagine in a creative writing endeavor, it can be a pretty big range.
Number one, it has to be civil.
Yes.
When I was a graduate student, I had a great writing instructor, a gentleman named Lee Abbott, who's one of the best short story writers in America. And he pulled no punches.
Uh-huh.
I mean, he would call me Bud. You know, he would say things like, you know, what are you doing here, Bud? You're just messing around here, Bud. And I would just, you know, bristle and cringe. But, you know, I was an athlete before I was a writer, and so I was used to that kind of, you know, harsh sort of criticism. And I think early on in my career as an instructor, I modeled that same kind of thing, and I found out very quickly that not everybody is suited for that kind of criticism, and you can do some real damage to somebody's personality and feelings about their self-worth if you're just harsh all the time. So be civil, be affirmative, be positive, but at the same time, be without reservations or qualms about saying this works and this doesn't work. Sometimes it's order. Sometimes it's the order of things. In my classroom, I'll say, let's first talk about what we see as the kind of what this story's trying to do or what this poem's trying to do. Then let's talk about what its virtues are, what we enjoyed, what gave us some pleasure, what connected us. And the terms I've used over time, it's every time I type it, Microsoft Word tells me it's not a word, but it's kind of underdeveloped areas. Areas that just haven't quite got up to par yet. And I think if just shaping it in that way gives people a feeling that you're not saying, this doesn't work, this is terrible, but that everything needs work. Again, I'll quote somebody, it's widely attributed to Da Vinci, said that no work of art is ever finished, it's only abandoned.
Right.
So you foster that sort of environment, people don't see it so much as each story is a measure of who they are as a writer. It's who you are at this point in time, and it's still something separate from you. I think that's one of the hardest things to get students to sort of understand is that we are talking about the work. Mm-hmm. We are talking about the work, not you.
Right.
But the creation of it is often so personal and intimate, it's hard for students to separate that.
Yes.
And I think that becomes another skill that they have to learn is distancing themselves from the work and seeing it as not a sort of measure of who they are. But I think that when the students see that, and our other faculty, Chris Holbrook and George Eklund, Carmen right. Eddington, Alex Taylor, all active, all publishing, is that the other thing is that you see that it makes it more real for you as a student. I mean, when I was an undergraduate, I was reading William Faulkner and Ralph Ellison and James Baldwin and Flannery O'Connor, and they were, most of them, no longer with us or living far, far away. To hear somebody talk about what their process is and to hear it one-on-one, not to read an interview or see it on TV or something like that, it makes it seem more attainable, because we are, you know, just, I mean, we're professors here. You see us walking around the common areas. And
well, Tom, one of the things you said right in the beginning that intrigues me is you know, write because you have a story to tell.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think about all the people that I meet in my walk through the region, through mm-hmm. my life. Everybody has a story or multiple stories to tell. What's, if you would comment on the kinds of students that come to class?
I think we get three distinct types of students. We get students who, for some reason or other, maybe they came to our arts academy that we have here in the summer. Maybe they were at a recruiting event and saw someone at the table. So they come and they're already engaged. They've had an instructor, an English teacher who lit them up, who mm-hmm. made them think this is possible, gave them kind of impetus to do that. And they're the ones who are pretty easy. Those are the students that you have to just get out of their way, you know. Don't move the obstacles too much for them, because a lot of times you have to run into some difficulties to figure out how to pivot around that on your own. Then we have some sort of wanderers, students who maybe started out someplace else. You know, maybe they were really encouraged to think about business, or maybe they were really encouraged to think about nursing. But you know, some reason they found it. Maybe they attended a reading series event. Maybe they walked past a classroom and heard everybody talking about unreliable narrators or how to break a line in poetry, and that got them there. And then there are oftentimes students who are mature students, non-traditional students, who have lived a life and are now coming back because this is what they want to do. The great thing is, if you have a classroom with all three of those students, types of students in there, it is lively.
I bet it is.
It is very much. I think to myself that I need my whip and my chair like a lion tamer sometime.
Yeah.
But most of the time, I'm just getting out of the way, just telling them what they're doing well, whom they need to read, because that's the thing that everybody profits from: reading widely, reading everything, reading your contemporaries, reading the masters, reading the people that you love, and then finding out whom they loved and kind of tracing it back to whatever origin we can get back to. I mean, pretty much everything ends with the Bible and Homer. So
tell us a little bit about the Chafin Award.
Chafin Award was established by Thomas and Lily D. Chafin and their family to honor and preserve Appalachian literature, in particular by selecting every year a writer from the region who has either excelled with the publication of a book that year or just has a kind of career that's worth celebrating. And in the time that I've been here, what's wonderful about it is you get a sense of Appalachia as a region that has certainly some common features. But I mean, we're talking about, I mean, one of the first years I was here, we gave it to a gentleman named Donald Pollock, who's from Chillicothe, Ohio, which a very Appalachian city.
Yes. Yep.
We've given it to Scott McClanahan, who's from West Virginia, George Ella Lyon, who's from Kentucky, a poet from Tennessee, a fiction writer recently, Charles Dodd White, a fiction writer from North Carolina who lives now in Knoxville. And you just start to see the sort of, one of the things that is always common in these writers' works is their love of place, mm-hmm. the physical and natural beauty of place. Even the physical and natural squalor of places shows up too, but they revere it. And another thing that's so common to their work is their celebration of voice, you know, what it sounds like to come from these various parts of the region. And we're fortunate. We're really lucky. It gets people. We just announced our Chafin winner for next year, a poet named Rose McClarney. One of my work study students in the department called her up, and she couldn't believe how excited Rose was to hear this news. She was just like, you know, this is such an honor.
That's
can't believe it. And that's the kind of thing we get to do.
Yeah. They get to come to Morehead.
Correct.
They present a talk, and mm-hmm. they, you know, usually maybe even get to do a workshop with people
right.
who may not have heard their work mm-hmm. before but could turn them on.
Right. And they read from their work. We often try to make sure that the public events are open to the public, not just students and faculty and staff, because it is just that. I mean, when you hear people's stories, like Donald Pollock I was talking about earlier, he was a gentleman who, say he was from Chillicothe, he worked at a meat packing plant, then worked at the Mead paper plant for a long time. His story of just getting to where he was as a writer will inspire just about anybody.
I know a lot of people love the reading series mm-hmm. as well. People come in and read their work, and
right.
You know, I can read your work, but
right.
when you bring the people in to read their own work, mm-hmm. it means a little bit.
It does, and a question I always ask of our reading series participants is, what was the first thing that you went to that was like this? And every one of them says, oh, well, when I was an undergraduate, I went to something like this, or when I was a graduate student, or, you know, I was working at a bookstore and this happened. And it's this kind of thing where you can connect with your faculty, you can connect with your peers, but when somebody from outside comes in and starts saying some of the same things, it rings a little bit truer, you know. So because we're able to get such a broad variety of writers, writers of color, writers from within the region, writers from outside the region, male, female, it's able to speak to the varied student body that we have here at MSU.
One of the things I noted, Tom, with the publication of your last book, you did a reading of that at our local bookstore,
mm-hmm.
The Fuzzy Duck.
Mm-hmm.
And I was reflecting on that, the importance of small towns having local businesses, how important that is for us to support a local
mm-hmm.
business. So, I mean, you might just comment on that.
Every writer that comes to visit Morehead walks away saying, I wish we had a bookstore like this. And they are, I mean, from bigger cities. You know, they may have a Barnes & Noble or a Books A Million, but they don't have something so intimate where if you go in and you buy a book, and somebody says, oh, I see you're reading Tom Williams' book. You know what? You'd also like Alex Taylor's book or Chris Holbrook's book or something like that. And that's just that kind of care and that kind of feeling of, and, you know, the good feeling that you have is supporting the local merchants and finding those connections that, you know, you can't get too many other places.
Yeah, that's fabulous.
We'll come back. We'll wrap this edition up after this break.
MSU's Office of Career Services helps match employers with employees, preparing Morehead State University students for today's growing and competitive workforce. Connect your business with qualified candidates for internships, part-time, or full-time employment. Contact the MSU Office of Career Services for more information at 606-783-2233.
There are many ways to connect with Morehead State Public Radio. Log on to WMKY.org for enhanced regional news, on-demand audio and video, breaking news from NPR, and information on your favorite programs. Get links to Facebook and Twitter while you listen to our live broadcast online, or download mobile apps from NPR and take 90.3 FM with you everywhere. Connect with your community and Morehead State Public Radio. Visit WMKY.org.
Welcome back to Shaping Appalachia. I'm Jason Blanton, joined by Morehead State University President Wayne Andrews. Time goes by fast, and creative writing, it seems like, is a great topic. If people are interested in coming to Morehead State and getting into the creative writing program, how can they do that?
Well, I mean, if they've applied, if they have met the typical qualifications needed to start as a student, they need to take a class called English 293, which is Intro to Creative Writing. And in that, I mean, it is just that. It's an introductory course. You don't have to be well practiced at it. You might have never written a story. You might never have read a poem. But, you know, you can come in and you can get to work through that. And then in that class, we usually ask to see a group of pieces, stories, essays, poems, and then make a kind of recommendation as to whether or not it's something to go on to. And you'll get a chance to study with me, you'll get a chance to study with Chris Holbrook or Alex Taylor. We'll steer you right.
You can email english@morehedstate.edu. You Correct. Get the email and be mm-hmm. able to help them out.
For me, it shows a dimension to what we do here at Morehead State University mm-hmm. that's kind of unique.
Right, yes.
You can go to many universities and study English or right. some subdivisions of English, but not that many programs or departments, I should say, have a program in creative writing.
For undergraduates.
For yes. undergraduates. So there is one here at Morehead State mm-hmm. University. It's got a fine group of faculty that are here to support, guide, direct, and mentor, and just encourage people to consider this because we all have stories to tell.
Absolutely.
We appreciate you taking time, Dr. Williams.
Thank you, Jason. Thank you, Dr. Andrews.
Thank you, Tom, very much.
That's this edition of Shaping Appalachia. We'll see you next month. Until then, so long, everybody.
This has been Shaping Appalachia, a public affairs program discussing the issues facing Appalachia, Kentucky, hosted by Morehead State University President Wayne D. Andrews and moderated by Jason Blanton. This program is produced through the facilities of Morehead State Public Radio.